Legally Blonde, Suits, My Cousin Vinny.
All badass lawyers, all different.
Which begs the question, what type of lawyer do you want to be?
Don't waste another second thinking, ugh, I don't even know what types of lawyers there are.
Trust us, we've been there.
Let's put a stop to that once and for all.
Go take the 90-second quiz from New Lawyer Now What coach Angela Vorpal to give yourself a clear picture of the best fit type law for you.
Go to www.whattypeoflawyerquiz.com and take the quiz today.
Once you've taken the quiz, send us a DM on Instagram to let us know what type of lawyer you got. We can't wait to hear.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Ladies Who Law Podcast. I'm Haley.
And I'm Sam.
And this week's episode is starring Amanda Moncato Perkins. We can't wait for you to hear this episode, so let's dive in.
Please help me welcome our guest, Amanda Moncato Perkins. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Hi, Sam and Haley. I'm doing well. How are you?
We are doing good. It's a, you know, Saturday morning, so enjoying the weekend.
Yeah, I'll be taking my son to a play date in about an hour, so I get it.
So will you tell us and the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So I hail from the south side of Chicago, born, raised, and kind of lived all over in different small cities of Chicago, suburbs. I am one of four, one of five. I have four brothers, a lot of. And let's see, I don't know. I'm a book nerd. I'm a mom. I'm a mentor. Just I wear several hats. I think probably something that's most interesting about me is that although I am an attorney, I very much have the most empathetic approach to being an attorney. And so I don't take myself too seriously. I take the work seriously, but I don't take myself too seriously. And I think that kind of helps with my client relationships. So
nice. So tell us, what made you want to become a lawyer?
So the reason, to be honest, the initial reason is very selfish. Coming from the south side of Chicago, and kind of what my upbringing was like, I kind of gravitated towards something that looked powerful, something that looked very important. And what helped me transcend my circumstances, if you will. So I didn't come from a very rich family. I didn't come from a middle-class family, you know? So, when I first saw a lawyer, it was one of the first people I saw that looked really amazing. And that person commanded attention. I was like, that person has power. I want to be like that person right there. And so it really was my way of trying to navigate out of my circumstances and to claim power because I felt so powerless in where I was. However, as I embarked on that journey, I realized that being a lawyer, yes, is actually very powerful. But it's how you use that power, and that power being influence, right? And so as I've, you know, went through my curvature of a career, I realized that I could be influential in helping people. And I found that I got the most gratitude out of that. And so that's kind of where I now sit in being a lawyer. I am a lawyer because of the influence that I can wield in making people's lives better.
So at what point did you decide you wanted to go to law school?
When I was in high school, actually, I sat in on a class called business law, and I have no idea why they offered that class. No clue. In high school. But the person that was teaching it was actually a paralegal. And, I didn't understand that. I just was like, oh, lawyer, you know? And, And I liked what she was teaching us. And it was a woman, you know, woman of color. I'm like, okay, you know, so I got that introduction, but I didn't really understand the concept of the power and the influence until I got into college and I started like engaging in pre-law activities. And I was like, oh, okay, this is serious. So I think I made the decision in college, my first year of college, I was like, yeah, this is what I want to be. Cause that's the time I saw somebody that looked really powerful.
Okay. So how was the application process for you? Like, how did you know, like, I know for me, I didn't have anyone around me that was applying to law school. So I didn't know what to do or, you know, what was important. So how was that for you?
Well, I felt the same way. To be honest, the pre-law program when I got to college was, it was not as structured as you would think. And I went to a Big Ten. So I was kind of shocked to learn that. So it was really like you make it into whatever you make it into. And so it was a lot of like bumping my head against the wall and asking a lot of questions. So I got very comfortable early on in my college education to just ask questions, you know, and I think to be a successful lawyer, period, you need to just get comfortable with asking questions. Yes. But so what I did was I stalked the law school. I would be talking to law students like, how'd you get here? What did you do? You know, and so I got some coaching from them. I would talk to people on the campus and the pre-law division to kind of get some guidance on how to do that too. But truly, it was so overwhelming. It was just like, okay, you need to take this test and have this recommendation and do all these things. And so I sat down and tried to make a plan. And so that's what I did. I got information, I digested it, and I was like, okay, so what's the first step, you know? But to be honest with you, I did not apply in college because, again, I was still very overwhelmed. And I was like, I'm not sure if this is the next step just yet. Right. So what I ended up doing, and also I was being heavily recruited by Teach for America. I don't know if you all are familiar with Teach for America. Okay. Being heavily recruited by Teach for America. And they're like, just come teach for a couple years. Law school's always there. And I'm like, yeah, you know, actually, that's right. Law school ain't going nowhere. So fine. All right. I'm going to go teach for a couple years. And while I did that, it helped kind of remove me from this, like, being overwhelmed with the application process and having time to really consider, do I really want to do this? Right. Because I had heard, like, law school isn't a joke. So if you don't really want to do it, please don't. So while I was teaching, I had a chance to kind of sit back and think about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm ready to do this. So I then went again to kind of just researching what are the steps that I needed to take. Honestly, Sam and Haley, there was no like person I can go to in my family that was like, hey, this is what you need to do. Let me make a couple phone calls for you. Let me like blah, blah, blah. All of this was like grassroots trying to get through the door. But I got here, so.
So where did you end up going to law school? And tell us about that.
Okay. I'm going to tell you about one of the, maybe the only regret I have in my life. And it revolves around this question. So while I was determining where to go, I had my dream school. You know, they tell you, get your dream schools, your reach schools, your safety schools or whatever. And so I did that. I was like, I'm a good student. I'm going to do that. But my dream school was Yale. And I'm like, because I was sold on the idea that I was going to be this like prolific, amazing legal professor, like law professor. I was going to do that. I don't know why. I just had that up in my mind. So, and Yale is like a wonderful academic institution, you know? So I had that down. And then I also had other schools, right? So come time to apply, I have all of my little materials together, recommendations and everything. And I submit and I apply to these various schools. And guess what school I did not apply to? Yale. Why? Why didn't I apply to Yale? Out of fear. I convinced myself that there was no way they were going to accept me because I wasn't good enough. I wasn't good enough. And I sabotaged myself. I sabotaged myself. I told myself no. I rejected myself before even submitting an application, before they even had a chance to review. And a lot of that was cemented in this idea of who am I to think that I can gain access to an institution like this? Look at where I come from. Look at, you know, who I am. And now I look back on that as one of the biggest regrets, because I took away an opportunity for myself. And so I would encourage your listeners to take heed from my own mistake and not self-sabotage. Go after the biggest, grandest version of yourself, and don't tell yourself no, right? You don't tell yourself no. Like, that's one person you don't tell no is you. But yeah. I had to learn that lesson. So I didn't go to Yale, but I ended up going to DePaul. And DePaul, locally here in Chicago, is an amazing institution, and it is a great ground for career building in Chicago. And so I went to DePaul, and it turned out to be an amazing decision because of the amount of investment they had in me. Like, they were excited for me to join. They were like, let's go, girl. We're scholarships. Yes. Like, support from, you know, professors. Yes. And so in a weird way, it turned out to be a blessing, and I'm very glad I went there. And at the same time, I'm disappointed that I did not even apply, right? Just apply. So from that lesson, I don't tell myself no anymore.
Right? Yeah.
That was the first and the last time I robbed myself of a dream or a possibility or a goal, right? I will try. And if I fall, cool, it's a lesson learned, but I will never check out of this life without having tried.
So you said that you had, you know, that it was almost like a blessing in disguise, right? Going to DePaul. So while you were there, you said that, you know, your professors were investing in you and like the school invested in you. And what does that look like? You know, because some people are maybe curious, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it looks like a lot of conversations and it looks like a lot of action. So I had actually, while I was in college, been introduced to some of the decision makers at DePaul during that time, because I created this conference while I was there. When I tell you, like, asking the questions and trying to figure stuff out, that's just how I've been. So when I was in college, I created this conference called the Law and Business Conference, because I was interested in business and I was like, they have to be intertwined. And so when I met a business lawyer, I was like, oh, okay. So let's bring the world of law and business together and teach people. So I put on a conference for college students and we learned a lot about law and business. And so what I had to do, this is probably one of the first times I've ever had to like pitch myself and try to get people on board as sponsors and stuff. And it was an amazing experience, because not a lot, like, so you get told no, and then you also get told yes, but we got some amazing people. So DePaul was one of those schools that agreed to sponsor, come out and talk to people. And I was like, it created an impression in my mind that they were even able and willing to do that, that I was like, okay, this is a positive impression. But there is when the investment started for me, at least, because they were like, we like the fact that she's doing this, right? This looks like somebody that's interested in building and creating and whatever. We would love to have a student like that. So when I reached out to one of my contacts there, and so I would say to the people that are listening, if they are students, get comfortable early contacting people, building relationships. Like, we are human beings. We love to connect with people. Even the introverts, I'm an introvert. Even the introverts like to connect. So reach out, ask someone to go to coffee, ask someone some questions, you know, you'll be surprised the kind of relationships you can build. So that's just literally what I did. I reached out to one of the deans there and I told them about my interest in going to law school, coming to DePaul specifically, and what they would be able to do to support that. And I just asked him straight up, like, what would it be like? And so he kind of walked me through that. Well, we have these programs. We have this over here. We have these type of people. We can also, you know, work with you on scholarships. And so before I even walked into the door, I kind of got an impression of what it would be like to be at DePaul. But while I was there, I just started talking to professors and seeing who would take an interest in me. And I was quite surprised at the number of people that would take an interest, because they really cared about their students and it was very apparent. Mm. So I would go in, I would go to the office hours. I would literally go talk to the deans, I mean, not many students were doing that. And I think because of that, we don't really leverage relationships the way that we could. Like, yeah, I know that the Office of Admissions is over there, but I'm going to go talk to the dean of law school. I want to, you know, I want to build a relationship with her too. And so building those relationships, people being open, them, you know, working on my behalf to find scholarships that I would qualify for, opportunities that I would qualify for, and just getting involved. So I think those things really helped a lot during during my time there. So if there was an opportunity for me to volunteer or get involved in some way, I would do that, because you just never know what those connections will lend itself to. And so I'll tell you about what happened as a result of those connections over the three years of working with professors and advisors and everything. When it came time for me to do interviewing for law firms, so when it was time to do on-campus interviews, I don't know if they do those anymore, I set my sights on joining Big Law. And I knew it was going to be challenging, because people just tell you it's difficult. If you don't go to the top 10 schools in the country, you're never going to get in. And I was like, well, I'm going to try. And you know why I was going to try, because I was like, I'm not going to tell myself no. I'm definitely not going to let you tell me no. So I did that already. So I'm going to apply to these law firms. But building the relationships that I built, I didn't realize that some of the professors actually had connections at some of the firms that I was applying to. So what I did, I just let them know. I'm like, hey, I'm applying to blah, 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 letting them know what I'm doing. I did not know that after one of the interviews that I landed with the big law firm, the professor called the managing partner of that law firm. It was like, hey, you interviewed one of my students. I need you to really take a good look at her. She's an amazing candidate. If you let her walk out of there without an offer, you made a terrible mistake. And he said to her, don't worry, we already did make her an offer. And I didn't know about this until I came and told her. I was like, hey, I'm really proud of myself. Guess what I did? I got an offer from this place. And then she let me know, like, I'm glad. And also I called to make sure that you were going to, you know, land that offer because you deserved it. Who does that? Who does that, right? Mm-hmm. People do that when they're invested in you. And so this is such a long-winded way of saying, build the relationships while you're there. If there are people at that school that are willing to take time to talk to you, pick up a phone for you, like, that's where you want to be.
That's huge. Yeah. So, okay. You got a job through OCI. Your professors helped you land that. I mean, I'm sure you did a majority of the work, duh, but it's all about relationships, like you said. Right. So whenever you went to work at the firm, what was that like, especially as a summer associate? I mean, we hear all the crazy stories, but I'm sure you wanted to transfer your relationships to that environment too. So what can you tell us about that?
Let me just say, being a summer associate is completely different than work as an associate. It's like I don't even know what to call it. It's like, it's a lot more fun, and they're trying to court you there, right? So they're not about to like do anything crazy. Like, come on, you know? And the assignments that you get are, I mean, it's enough to see, can you read and write well? Right. Can you listen to instructions, which is important. Like when I hire on my team, those are important. Can you read, write well, and listen to instructions? Right. So, but the summer associate program is a lot different than being an associate. So I think what I did as a summer, I took it super seriously. Y'all, like when I say I took the work so seriously, it was ridiculous. I'm like, I got to land this offer. I was told, like, being a summer associate, it's your offer to lose, right? Like, you have it, just don't lose it. So I'm like, oh, I'm not going to lose this. What I did was try to make sure I made a good impression regarding my, you know, reading, writing, listening to instructions and stuff. But also trying to build relationships with my fellow summer associates. And I'm glad that I did that, because several of them I keep in contact with today, and we send each other opportunities. Which is really important. So again, what am I getting at? The theme, I think, is relationship building. So during the summer, if you're at a big law firm, I'm not sure if this is the same as like a boutique law firm, but you at least get the opportunity to explore different practice groups to see where you really want to land. And so I took advantage of that to try to meet as many people as I could, because I wanted to make sure that I could get my foot in the door. After landing that opportunity, then it was like the real work began once I started as an associate. And let me tell you, that is a whole different ball game. It is not the, like summer associate, that like allure goes out the window. You are now billing hours. Like, it gets serious.
Yeah. So it seems that you got an offer to be a full-time associate after graduation.
I did. Yeah. Which is also, so I know that is not always the case for law students. So I want to speak to that. First of all, it's not always the case that you're going to land a job out of OCI too. I want to speak to that as well. I was highly blessed. And like I said, having people on my team, like pushing for my success, I am so grateful. I'm so grateful for that. You don't have to do it alone. But let me speak to the fact that that doesn't always happen that way. And I don't want people to be discouraged from that. Because I have friends that are super successful that did not land interviews or offers through OCI. So one thing I will say is your first job is not your forever job. It doesn't have to be your forever job. It can be the stepping stone to the next thing. And your legal career should really be one of exploration. Where do you want to be? Right? Because maybe you don't want to be at a big law firm. And so I have had friends, extremely talented friends, who didn't land a position in OCI. And they ended up getting an offer after graduating, not even at graduation, because yet that is not another thing that's not as common. So I've had a friend who started out in like at an insurance practice and then landed her way to now she's a junior partner at a big law firm. Right. And people will say things like, oh, if you don't start in big law, you can't get there. If you want to be there, you can find your way there. But you may not want to be there, right? Not big law is not for everybody, and everybody isn't turned on to that. You may want to do something else. So maybe you want to land a clerkship. You're not going to land that through an OCI interview, right? You're going to have to land that through networking and, you know, finding people that have done it before to speak your name in those rooms that you're not in. So I just want to encourage people to understand that, like, just because you don't land where you want to be the very first job, then that is okay. Hell, I'm not in big law anymore. Hello. So like it wasn't my forever job either. So I just wanted to mention that. Yes, you're right. I did have an offer at graduation. I was extremely blessed to have an offer at graduation. And so I started maybe a couple months thereafter after taking the bar, which is extremely grueling.
Okay. So let's talk about big law for a little bit.
Okay.
Obviously, you're not in big law anymore, you said. Mm-hmm. So how long were you in big law and, you know, what was your experience? Why did you decide to leave?
Yeah. So I was in big law for maybe about four and a half years. And to just be honest with you, the first 3 months I was like, I'm quitting. I was like, I gotta get out of this.
Yeah.
It was nothing like I had ever experienced before. Ever. Before I'd even gone to law school, I was an elementary school teacher. So like I had no concept of 80-hour weeks ever. So you get to big law and it's like a whole other ball game. And all that had been in my mind is like, you got to be professional. You got to be willing to do whatever it takes. Like the things that we're told, right? Like you got to put forth your best effort, do what they tell you to do and all of this stuff. And honestly, DePaul getting me ready for, you know, life after law school was same advice that I think we all get. You know, you're young, you got to show you're hungry and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, got to do this. You know, this is when, I'm at my dream job right now and all of that. So what was it like? I mean, let me start off by saying this. I got some amazing training. I did. I grappled with some legal issues that were pretty intricate. I got a chance to work alongside some brilliant, brilliant people. And I got a chance to see what level of rigor I could bring to law, right? Because I was always, I don't know if you all felt this way, but I was always like, am I smart enough to be a lawyer? They just seem so, yeah. you know, I don't, how do I even figure out this legal issue, you know? And so being there allowed me to at least confirm that, oh yeah, I'm smart enough. Are you kidding me? Like there are yeah. times when I would find answers and solutions to things that the partners didn't think through, you know? And I was like, okay, there are times I would find errors that the partners made and like contracts and stuff. And I would give myself a pat on the back, like, yeah, girl, you got this. And so seeing the successes of my work was amazing. However, at the same time, the amount of pressure you're under is grueling. And I couldn't sustain that for a very long time. So when I say the pressure, you're working, yes, you're working at these high levels and it's like mistakes are not tolerated. Not that anybody is looking to make a mistake, but you're human. You're going to make one. Mistakes yeah. are not tolerated. The hours are long. So I worked in transactional practice where we were negotiating deals all the time. There was no off time. There's no off switch, right? So when I tell you that I was always available, I was literally always available. I didn't have nights or weekends. I didn't sleep as well as I should have. It was a lot for me. And for a lot of us who step into this arena, you come in with this like level of perfectionism, right? Mm-hmm. Like I got to do it right. I got to do it well. And that is a law firm is almost breeding ground for that anxiety because it's like, yeah, you got to be perfect with your work. And so the hours were long. The feedback sometime was a bit stringent. I was always concerned that I was going to get fired. Literally, I was concerned I was going to get fired every day. I had all the success in the world and still thought people were going to fire me. Like, nope, you're not good enough, you know? And so I would like save all my money. It's like, if I get fired, I need to live. And so you're under that kind of pressure. I, you know, the things that I was told and the ways that I was treated, not by everybody, but people that really had a lot of influence, left a bad taste in my mouth such that I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I had to make a decision. It was either I stay and just get through it because I was told this is what it is. Like, you want to play at the high level, then you need to deal with this. And I was like, dang. Okay. And I was also told if I left, then I was committing career suicide. Nobody leaves this. Like, you leave this, where are you going? And I was like, dang again. Like, you know, I guess I won't be a successful attorney. So I had to come to grips with the fact that like my mental health, my physical health as well, were more important to me than that paycheck and then having that title behind my name. And so I left.
We'll be right back.
Hey guys, we want to take a moment to talk about something that has been a game changer for us busy lawyers, Audible.
Yes, Audible has been our go-to platform for incredible audiobooks, offering an extensive library of thrillers, nonfiction, autobiographies, and mysteries.
And guess what? We've got a special treat for you. Audible is offering a free trial to our listeners, and all you need to do is check the link in the show notes. It's the perfect opportunity to experience the magic of audiobooks without spending a dime.
Speaking of thrillers, I know you are currently hooked on Never Lie by Freda McFadden. Samantha, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. The twists and turns in Never Lie have kept me on the edge of my seat during the workday and even when I'm on my daily walks. It's like having a suspenseful companion wherever I go.
And for those looking for some financial wisdom, I have been engrossed in My Money, My Way by Kamuku Love. It's packed with practical advice on managing finances, perfect for anyone trying to navigate the complexities of money management.
What we love most is the flexibility Audible offers. As lawyers, our schedules can be unpredictable, but with Audible, we can enjoy our favorite books on the go, whether we're stuck in traffic, hitting the gym, or waiting for a court hearing.
So, if you're ready to embark on a literary journey and discover the joys of audiobooks, click the link in the show notes to start your free trial with Audible. Trust us, you won't want to miss out on this fantastic offer.
So once you left, what was your next move?
Yeah, I didn't have one. So I worked at two globally recognized law firms, right? And I thought if I move from one to another, maybe it'll be a bit better, because I was like, maybe that'll ease it, but it didn't. So I took that leap of leaving. And when I tell you, I was extremely scared to do that, because I was like, who am I? I'm not going to be an attorney. I'm not going to be taken seriously. So I figured, you know, I need a moment to just reflect on who I am. And so I decided I would leave all that money I saved. I was like, I'm going to take a year-long sabbatical and kind of figure it out. That year-long sabbatical turned into a 3-day sabbatical, because I was like, what the hell did you just do? Oh my God, you threw your whole career away. What is wrong with you? You know, even my parents were like, okay, yeah, we support you. Like, I don't know. So I was freaking out, and I thought, oh my God, maybe I need to just go find a job. But what stopped me was I had a conversation with a big law partner who happened to be a mentor of mine. And she and I had a heart to heart. And so we went to lunch, we had a heart to heart, and she was like, Amanda, don't tether yourself to this. You can do so many more things. And that was encouraging to me, but I was like, but what? What am I going to do? I don't know. So really, I landed my next thing by chance. And I'll tell you what that means. So as I'm talking to this law firm, this partner, she's amazing. She goes, you know, I could see you being like an influencer or something. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I could do that. She was like, well, at least meet this one woman she's a former big law attorney and she runs her own practice. Maybe there's some synergy there. You guys can. So I was like, okay, fine. I'm open to relationships, right? Like I tell you, relationships, you never know. So I sit down with this woman, and we were supposed to have an hour-long lunch. That lunch turned into 3 hours, okay? And while we're talking, she's like, so what do you want to do, Amanda? I was like, I don't know what I want to do. I just want to help. Like, I want to help people. That is all that I know I want to do. I know I'm smart. I could do it. What do you need help with, you know? And so we start talking, and I land her as my first client to just help her in her business. That is it. And how did I land her as a client? Simply because I had a contact, which was the law firm partner, who told me to go talk to this woman. And I sat down and I spoke with her, and she's like, let's just do something together. You know, again, that's wild. And I am truly grateful for relationships. So I ended up being her like fractional director of operations. What the hell do I know about operations? Right. So I get there, and I'm learning more about her business. I am a business lawyer. So I'm like, I'm learning about her business. And she's like, yeah, I'm having this issue and this issue and this issue. I need to bring in more money. You know, maybe you can help me think through that. And what do I hear? I hear a challenge. I'm like, I'm a problem solver. Let's figure this out, you know? And so as I'm working with her, I realize I have a knack for it. Why? Because we're lawyers, we're problem solvers. And this is interesting to me. So as I worked with her, I then made the decision that I would start doing business consulting.
That's so cool. So what does business consulting consist of?
So I figured that I was really good at identifying operations and issues within that, right, for a business. And I think lawyers make wonderful operations officers, directors of operations, because of the way we think, right? There is an end goal in mind. We need to backwards, like, engineer this thing and figure out what are the missing pieces here, who are the stakeholders involved, and then how do we solve those individual pieces? It's really like a puzzle, and yeah. And we're built for that, right? And so I challenge people. Go look up some of the operating officers for some of these companies and be surprised. You'll be surprised at how many of them have a JD. So what I would do was I would serve as a fractional chief operating officer, go inside of companies, help them identify their inefficiencies and address them, and then help them grow money. So for example, I had one client who was in marketing, and I went into her business, noticed where she was having some major issues. And in 1 year, we grew her revenue to almost 250%.
Wow.
It was wild. It was wild. And I would have never known that I could do this had I not had that conversation with that woman at the table for 3 hours, right? But I didn't stay in that role for very long. I did that for about 1 or 2 years until I felt that nudge to do law again, because I just couldn't take that hat off, right?
Yeah.
While I was working with my business consulting clients, I'm still giving them the benefit of they're reviewing their contracts, helping them negotiate things, and talking to them about legal issues. And I'm like, you know, I'm doing all this work. I should get paid more for this. And also, I miss law. So I need to kind of explore that a little bit more.
Okay. So what did that look like?
So what did that look like? Well, a lot of trying to convince myself that dipping my foot back into the legal pond was going to be the right decision for me. Because remember, when I had left big law, I was told I was committing career suicide. And I wouldn't be taken seriously as a lawyer. So I had to convince myself that being a lawyer, a practicing attorney, I could be successful at doing it without having the big names behind me. And that took a year. That took a year of convincing myself. I went back and forth with it. So I decided, let me take a baby step. I'm going to go and become an adjunct law professor. And so I decided to do that. I was teaching contract negotiations and drafting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, y'all, I feel it too hard. I need to get back into this. I got to get back into the full swing of it. The students were amazing. The experience was amazing. And so I was like, forget it. I am launching my law firm. I am launching my law firm. I don't care who calls me crazy, because when I was coming up, the idea of you launching a law firm was laughable. It was like, no, like you're going to be what? Some like solopreneur who just like hangs out their shingle and, you know, and I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to build a firm. Mm. So I opened my law firm and I focused on business law, and I had people coming, like people. Here's the other thing. I had told myself that there are so many folks are already out here doing it, right? There are a number of business attorneys out here that can do what I do, right? But the reality is that's not true. There are a lot of business attorneys out here, but they don't do what you do, mm-hmm. right? They don't do it how you do it. And they don't have the concoction of your experience, your background, your know-how, right? All your relationships, your special touch, your special sauce. They don't have that, right? So before I even launched my firm, I had people coming to me like, hey, Amanda, are you providing legal services and whatever? And I would tell them no. I would turn clients away, y'all. I had to turn people away. And I was like, let me give you some recommendations, some referrals. And I would receive comments like, yeah, but I don't want them. I want to work with you. And I'm like, but they do what I do. Or they would say, yeah, Or they would say things like, well, I've tried working with that person before. It's just not my style. And I'm like, oh my God. So that kind of encouraged me to think like, maybe there are other attorneys out here, but there is a market for me, right? So I started my law firm about a year and a half ago. 2023 was like the first full year of the firm. It's a baby firm. But we had an amazing year. And I was really shocked, amazed, and very proud of the number of clients that came, because they were like, we don't want just a lawyer. We want a lawyer that's going to stand in the gap the way that you do. We want a lawyer that shows up the way that you do. And so that has been truly a blessing. And again, stepping out on faith and not telling yourself no, you'll be surprised what happens.
So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, starting your own firm, and like, is it just you? Do you have a team? What does that look like?
Yeah. So starting my own firm, I definitely had an assistant. So I would say you don't have to start off with having a team member, right? What do you need? You need a few things to start. You need a license. You need to make sure you have your license. You need to make sure that you have a way for people to contact you. Make sure you have a way to have legal resources at your disposal. So maybe you can't, not everybody can start off right away with like a Lexis subscription or a Westlaw subscription. That stuff is expensive. So, but you find ways to get the resources that you need to do the legal research and all of that. So you need the know-how. You need a practical way for people to contact you, obviously email address, a practical way for people to pay you. So there are so many options out here you can explore. And then a way to get your name out there. So social media, for the most part, still makes it easier by giving you free platforms, right? You can sign up for LinkedIn easily and just start educating people about what you do. It's very simple to get started. I mean, you want insurance too. Okay. I don't know how practical you want me to get with it, but you know, you want to make sure you have an insurance, a malpractice insurance too, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just like, there are a few steps that you need to take. No, you don't need $10,000 to start your firm, right? But you're going to make some monetary investment. And then you have to have the willpower to be consistent. That part is the most challenging part, because you can be the smartest attorney in the world. You can have the best personality ever, and you can deliver the greatest work product. But if nobody knows who you are, and they don't know how to find you, you will be in your silent corner of the internet all by yourself. Okay. And so showing up and speaking out and talking and educating people, I think is the most challenging part about building a practice, because we're just not taught that, right? Like, we're taught how to be lawyers, which I guess means just how to find legal issues, spot the legal issues and find a resolution, right? We're not taught how to run a business. We're not taught how to communicate ourselves to a market and, or to even, you know, educate our clients, really. So all of that stuff you have to learn and be committed to. People are not just going to be like, you're smart, let me hire you. No, they're going to be like, yeah, there are a lot of smart people out here. Why should I hire you? You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is the most challenging part, I think, about running a firm or getting out here on your own, is that fear that people are going to judge you. They're going to think you don't know what you're talking about, or I'm smart enough. Why do I have to, quote unquote, sell my services? That's weird, you know?
Well, what is your last little bit of advice for any attorney out there who is thinking, I want to start my own firm? Maybe they've felt scared. Maybe they've been talking themselves into it for a year now. What do you say to them?
Practically speaking, I would say to them, it's much easier than you think. To get started, the hardest part is that mindset.
Yeah.
And so for the mindset piece, I will say to them that try to live your life where it's one without regrets, right? Don't check out of here without at least trying to do the thing that's on your heart. If it's to start your firm, try. And if you do it and you're like, this ain't for me, go find a job, right?
Yeah.
Or if you decide, I really want to land a clerkship, go try for it. You know, I think the biggest thing we should all carry with us is if there's something tugging us on our hearts, to not ignore it, because that would be one of those regrets at the end of your life. Like, why didn't I just at least try? And there is no failure in trying. There are lessons learned. And the beautiful thing about trying is that even if you decide it's not for you, you have learned another level of your confidence, of your capabilities, and possibly your interests that you didn't know before. Right. So I just told you all that I ran a business consulting firm. What? Right. What? That is something like, if I were a business school student, sure, that probably would have been like, yeah, I'm going to go run a firm. I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. But as a lawyer, what? No. But I looked at my leaving of the big law firm as I was like, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to do it anyway. And then it landed me to one thing after another, after another, after another. And so I would say to people who, if you're looking to start your law firm, It's much easier than you think. The biggest hurdle you're going to have to overcome is your mindset. And the mindset piece, really meditate on the fact that you have one life to live. Take an opportunity. Bet on yourself if you bet on no one else. And don't check out of here without having left it all on the table.
Such good advice. Amanda, thank you so much. I mean, I feel so inspired. And also, some takeaways, relationships, how important they are, how impactful they were in your career. I mean, we preach that here all the time. And we are so happy to hear your story and how much it just lends itself to that, that is all true. So, Amanda, if anyone wants to chat with you after, maybe they're in the Chicago area, they want to meet up, where can they find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. That's pretty much where I'm most active. And you could just search under my name, Amanda Moncada Perkins. And then, you know, send me an email at hello@stoutaglaw.com. And we'll find some time to book a social call. I'm always interested in chatting with people because I do want more of us in this space. There are not a lot of us in this space holistically. So I'd be more than happy to chat with anybody that wants to reach out. Again, that's Amanda Moncada Perkins on LinkedIn, or you can send me an email at hello@stoutaglaw.com. Thank you both. I appreciate it.
Wow, guys. She was so great. I think I want to be her.
I mean, definitely. I love the idea of starting your own law firm and everything that goes into that. And I just appreciate her so much for sharing her story and, you know, opening up about the process. So, you know, if any of you guys are in law school, or maybe you're out of law school, maybe you're 3 or 4 or 5 years out and you're thinking, man, I kind of want to start my own law firm, you got to reach out to her.
Yep. All of her info will be in the show notes, of course. And while you're in the show notes, make sure to click on our Instagram. You can go ahead and follow us. It's at the Ladies Who Law podcast on Instagram. And also check out our website. We have some merch on there that, yeah.
All right, guys. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen so you don't miss an episode. Also, remember, the biggest compliment you can pay us is to recommend our podcast to a friend. We would really appreciate it.
All right, guys. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.